time.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything is fine. Hey, everybody, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Relax.
Coming to you live from the 215. I am Kyle Pagan, as always, joined by my man, Mark Henry. Before we get into today's bi-week Eagles episode, I want to talk to you about Tap Room. Hey, Philly, tired of paying Drizzly and GoPuff's ridiculous fees? I know I am. Try Tap Room, a huge selection of high-quality, hard-to-find beers, ciders, seltzers, and more. Great for discovering new brands while also being able to order your favorites as well. They'll deliver the drinks right to your door with none of those hidden fees, none of those hidden services. And just for Everything's Fine listeners, the Finer Things Club, you get $50 off using code FINE50, P-H-I-N-E, 50, $100 order or more. College football this Saturday. Is there any college football this Saturday, Mark?
No.
No college football this Saturday. So,
Army-Navy.
Duh. Army-Navy this Saturday. Yeah, if you're going up to New York, well, if you're watching Army-Navy, but it's also supposed to be like 67 degrees here. So, really? I mean, get the day parties in as long as you can. Go out to the backyard, order $100 worth of Miller Lite, get it delivered before 4 p.m. or order that before 4 p.m., get it delivered the same day. Get $50 off. Everyone needs a party hero. Be the party hero. All right, Mark. Welcome to the Eagles bye week. We get absolutely no help from the Steelers last night. Almost got a little bit of help, but absolutely no help from the Steelers for at least the first 3.5 quarters. We need some help from the Cowboys this weekend. It'd be nice if the Bengals helped us out this weekend. And we're definitely not getting any help, supposedly, from Russell Wilson. Because he's decided, according to Jordan Schultz, that Wilson would consider waiving his no-trade clause for the Broncos, the New York Giants, and the Saints. Now, Adam Schefter said he thinks last week on John Kincaid's show that Russell would also waive his no-trade clause for the Eagles. I believe more Adam Schefter than I do believe Jordan Schultz, but who knows? I mean, Adam Schefter could just be carrying the water for an agent for something else. For he could be just giving his report to whoever Russell Wilson's agent is. Hey, is this good before I release it on ESPN.com, a la Bruce Allen? But I kind of wanted to break down the three teams that were in that report, the Giants, the Saints, and the Broncos. And can we just start off with the New York Giants, that this is definitely a Sierra ask?
Yeah, it's New York City for a reason. That's the whole thing. For some reason, I think the Giants have kind of in a similar way to the Phillies, actually. I think that there's across the league, and I think that, you know, big players and casual fans don't look at the Giants like the utter disaster and tragedy and joke that they've become. They look at the Giants as the team that was relevant for all those years and won two Super Bowls and in New York City with stable ownership. Like, I think that people look at the Giants like that, almost in a way that I remember when Bryce Harper signed with the Phillies, people were like, oh, well, the Phillies were just a great organization. They were a mainstay at the top of the NL for years. It's like, well, it was 5 years, and then they haven't been good before or since at all. So I kind of think the Giants are similar to that. And this kind of is like a broader conversation we'll get to the Saints. But how much do you think, like, NFL players pay attention to what, like, the inner dynamics of what's going on in other teams? Like, does Russell Wilson just look at the Giants and he's like, oh, Saquon Barkley? Yeah, I'm in. He's good, right? He's on Madden. Or like,
I think other athletes are casuals. Like, they're so busy during the week that how can they pay attention to? I think a select few might, you know, be able to like break down the inner workings. They all have friends on each team and everything. But you're exactly right. He's going to a team that are basically the Seahawks, kind of like bad offensive line. The wide receivers can't stay healthy. You have a top running back that can't stay healthy. You have a bad coach, worse than Pete Carroll, no matter what's going on. You have a slightly better defense. Really, the only thing is it's a way less tougher division than he would be in the NFC West. And the Giants, if you need a trade partner with the Seahawks, they are the only ones that have the compensation that could compete with the Eagles.
Yeah, that's why I've always said that the Giants make the most sense. And because even if he shouldn't want to go there, you always knew that he was going to be open to going to New York City. So if I had to guess who Russell Wilson is playing his football for next year, it would be the Giants.
Really? Yeah, I guess that sucks because you're right, because you have to factor in the Seahawks there. You know, obviously, if this was Russ's choice, I mean, the day the trade window opened up, you know, Russ's agent needs to get to Seattle and be like, hey, listen, trade me to New Orleans, because him and Sean Payton, that's 100% the right move.
Yeah, I mean, but even that, the Saints have a lot of problems on their team, as we saw when they came here. Obviously, that big one is quarterback, so Russ does shore that up. But they don't have a weapon to speak of. It depends on what's going on with Michael Thomas. I've kind of assumed in my head that Michael Thomas will not be on the Saints next year. That's kind of something, just based on all the drama and the ignoring their advice for surgery and all that types of stuff. I just don't know how this gets resolved. Maybe you bring in Russell Wilson and everything's hunky-dory, everything's fine. Michael Thomas goes back to being happy and doing whatever anyone wants him to do on the Saints. But I am kind of assuming he's gone. So really, does Russell Wilson just want to go to the Saints because he's like, oh, Sean Payton's really good, Alvin Kamara is really good, and Michael Thomas is really good? Because that's pretty much all the Saints have going on for them. I know they have a pretty good defense. Dennis Allen's a good defensive coordinator. I could see him getting hired away to be a head coach soon. But, you know, I agree, just in principle, when you can put Russell Wilson and Sean Payton together, you probably have to get it done, and you probably have to make it happen. I think New Orleans is probably a city that Russ and Sierra would embrace. I know it's not like a media mogul market like in New York or in L.A. or the places Sierra would probably want to live. But given the teams that need quarterbacks, New Orleans is a fun place to live, I'm sure. I'm sure you could get a fun place to – or a crazy expensive place to live on the French Quarter.
Very cheap, yeah.
Yeah, very cheap, yeah. So I think yeah, I think it makes a ton of sense. And the Saints and the Giants do not surprise me at being on this list at all.
No teams with no income tax. Usually there's always a team with no income tax you throw in there, like Texas, Florida. Which I think the no income tax is one of the most overblown things when it comes to like what people care about. Like, yes, you don't get taxed on your income, but I'm pretty sure, I could be totally wrong, but I'm pretty sure the tax code, like when there's no income tax, they get you like on the back end on like another tax. I'm pretty sure like property tax. Yeah. Pretty sure like either property taxes are high or like healthcare is high or something like that. I'm pretty sure like states can't just be like, hey, here's no income tax, come live with us. Like, wouldn't people just like always go down to those states if they didn't really, you know, get you on the back end? That's what I tell my dumb brain.
Yeah, it sounds right.
I actually like don't think the Saints' weapons are as bad, I guess, as you might. I thought Marquez Callaway and Tre'Quan Smith, I thought Marquez Callaway was playing pretty well with Jameis. I mean, I think, and I also think the Russell Wilson effect is where he can turn like any wide receiver into a perennial Pro Bowler.
Yeah, I guess, but Seattle has always had guys. Like they have always had guys that played elsewhere or they brought in or they drafted or they go elsewhere.
But it's like no top 10 guys. Like DK is probably the best wide receiver I ever played with.
I think they have two top 15 guys right now.
You think it's DK and Tyler Lockett, right? Mm-hmm. But when he had Doug Baldwin, when he had Golden Tate.
Those were good players.
They were good players, but I would never say they were like top
25
wide receivers. Yeah, like it wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't like your he was playing like with Randy Moss or he was playing T.O. or like those are never guys that are like, holy shit, like Russ and like Michael Thomas. Like, and you're right. Michael Thomas would be the best wide receiver he played with, but Michael Thomas most likely will not be there. I don't know what his contract is off the top of my head. I think this team, I think Russell Wilson ultimately makes this team. And what are they? The NFC South. They'd be up with the Bucks, Titans, and Jags.
Bucks, Falcons, and Panthers.
Bucks, Falcons, Panthers. I would say they're probably plus 250 to win the division. That might be too high, really, if he goes there right now.
I think it'd be higher. I think Tampa's just so good right now that it's hard to – who knows what they'll look like next year. But
yeah. The one that makes zero sense to me,
yeah,
the Denver Broncos – I don't know if he's a huge Cortland Sutton fan. I don't know if he thinks KJ Hamler is as good as he was in college. There's another wide receiver off the top of my head that I'm forgetting.
Jerry Jeudy.
Thank you. There's no chance Vic Fangio is there if he goes there. And also, Russ is way too short for John Elway.
Yeah. Yeah. John takes one look at Russ and he's like, get out of my sight. Yeah. Get out. I guess
you don't look good in shorts. I can't have you.
Yeah, this is, I mean, that's why the Aaron Rodgers, the Aaron Rodgers rumors have always made more sense for Denver. But yeah, there's this media creation that the Denver Broncos are ready to like go compete for a Super Bowl if they get a quarterback. And I get that they're 6-6 right now and they're a little better than people expected. But yeah, I'm, you know, Sutton, Judy are both pretty good players. Like Javonte Williams could be a really good player. We don't know yet. They have a fine O-line. I think their defense, is really overblown.
Yeah, right? With Bradley Chubb can't stay healthy. They got rid of Vaughn, obviously. They're in this like weird, like they're like the win now. They're like the win now Seahawks. Like the win now, like 4-9 Seahawks are like, we're in win now mode. It's like, well, you guys just can't find a place to start to win.
Yeah, no, it's, I think Carolina is a better situation than Denver. I don't understand why anyone would look at Carolina and Denver and be like, I'm more excited about Denver's roster. I think there's a lot more to be excited about on Carolina's roster, but Carolina won't get mentioned for any of these guys. Carolina, I mean, Aaron Rodgers isn't going to Carolina. Russell Wilson's not going to Carolina. So it's funny to me that Denver is some huge media market above Charlotte. Like, I don't know. I kind of look at those kind of, I mean, Denver's a bigger city. It's a better city probably. And, you know, weed's legal, but you separate those two things, Denver and Charlotte. It's not like we're talking about New York City and Oklahoma City. Like
maybe
until
Future comes and visits his kid. Maybe when Future comes in and visits, it's like, hey, we have to go to a weed legal city. We have to go to a very pro marijuana environment. So Future has as an incentive to come visit little Future. Who Russell Wilson also loves. And I don't know if he adopted him or whatnot, but whole weird situation there.
What a mess. It's such a mess.
Could you imagine the blame fest if Russell Wilson and Matt Rhule were on the same team?
Oh, it would be unbelievable.
Week 7, there would just be an all. He would take the play calling away from Russell Wilson. Like, it would be like Matt Rhule would walk into David Tepper's office, like, I got to fire Russell Wilson. He's like, well, you can't do that. It's like, well, he's got the play calling.
There's a rumor he's in some trouble, Rhule.
Who else is he going to blame?
Yeah. He's allegedly, I have some birdies telling me that Matt Rhule is in trouble and basically did that Joe Brady move to try to be like, if I'm going down with the ship, it better be my own ship. I guess he wasn't. The rumor is that he necessarily wasn't the hugest fan of the Joe Brady thing, but he respected where he had come from and kind of let ownership in Carolina make that decision to bring him in, and then quickly realized that they weren't going to mesh together and has been trying to get him fired for a year and a half now, I guess, which is wild.
I'll tell you where Matt Rhule is going wrong. Playing Temple football players 12.5% of your snaps, where you look at everybody's percentage of snaps on their team, it's all Big 12 guys, it's all SEC guys, it's a lot of Big 10 guys. Carolina Panthers, Temple, 12.5% of snaps is playing. I'll tell you right there, you can't win a lot of times with AAC guys. I'm sorry.
By the way, that graph was like one of my favorite things ever to like look at in depth and like look at where my Notre Dame guys are at across the league. And it's not, I think Minnesota's up there. They always draft Notre Dame guys. There was one other team, might've been Carolina, that was second with Notre Dame guys. So that just a side note, that graph was very fun. If you could find that and I guess quote tweet it out with this podcast, I feel like people would like that.
Yeah. I did want to offer this. Rob Motti had a mention from an AFC executive here that he told Rob Motti that the Eagles could look to trade 2 of 3 2022 first-round picks to accumulate more draft capital in 2023. That way they evaluate Jalen Hurts for another year and still have extra picks. So maybe, you know, people think Russell Wilson isn't even in the conversation for the Eagles, maybe because he won't go there, maybe because Seattle won't trade him, maybe because, you know, the Eagles might not even want him. What do you think about the Eagles kind of pushing not the chips back, not the chips all in.
Kicking
the can down the road. That's why you're my co-host. What do you think about the birds kicking the can down the road? It's a Howie move. Howie loves kicking the can down the road. If it's draft capital, if it's contracts.
Yeah, it seems like a great move for a GM who wants to save any sort of, job security. And that's what it's been all year. I mean, you can't criticize Howie in 2021 because of the fact that we have three first round picks coming. So you have to couch that with everything you say. And I a few weeks ago, I said, you know, how impressive is it that we're competing for a wild card spot with a young quarterback and three first round picks? But the flip side of that is, you know, Howie has a job as long as he keeps those picks. And I don't think anyone in Philadelphia is like clamoring for Howie to keep his job. But, you know, maybe this is a moot point anyway. Like I've always said, I don't see him getting fired no matter what happens. So it's probably irrelevant to the whole kicking the can down the road. He's probably secure in his job no matter what. But yeah, I hate it. I mean, how could you not hate it? Just like on first thought, obviously it could go really well. What if we get the 20th pick from Indy and we trade for a first round pick from Seattle and they end up going and trading Russell Wilson and we get the first pick? I mean, obviously things can work out, and trading a 2022 mid-round first round pick could end up turning into a top five pick in 2023. But you do just want to see this team be good. Yeah. And next year you add three first round picks to this team, and with Jalen Hurts a quarterback, I think they'd be good, or whatever you want to do at quarterback. I think this team has the potential to be a good team that legitimately competes for the playoffs, maybe not contends for a title or anything like that. But I think that this is a team that can compete for a division, compete for a playoffs, and have higher expectations than we have of this current version. And this current version has maybe outperformed those expectations in some ways, maybe met those expectations at least, exactly where we thought they'd be kind of at this point. But, you know, it would be nice to go into next year thinking, you know what, we could really win the division. We got these three studs on defense. We added whatever we added with cap space. Hopefully we add a second receiver. Who knows what happens, but yeah. It would be a punch in the gut at the time of the 2022 draft. And if they do this, it's funny. But if they do this, I will say that they better wait until the draft. I want to see how the draft pans out. I don't want to trade the 16th pick in March because we feel like we have to get a pick for 2023, and then somehow a CeeDee Lamb type situation happens where someone falls way farther than they should, and they go right before you. Yeah. So
let people's buttholes pucker up before you trade your first round. Like that, does it change your mindset that now the Dolphins are like the hottest team in football? The Birds, I think they're going to make the playoffs, so that'll be kind of a mid round pick, and then obviously the Colts pick will be up there too. Does it change now that those aren't like three top 10 picks anymore? Are you more willing to kind of like let go of those picks?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. But I think there's a good chance all three picks fall between like 16 and 20, like 16 and 22. I think all three teams have a chance to make the playoffs. Probably Miami, the least of which, even though they're really hot, even though they're 6-7, just probably be pretty hard for them to win out and make it. I do think Indy is going to make the playoffs, so that affects that pick. I do think we're going to compete for the playoffs with Washington, so I think that affects that pick. But when you have all these picks, it gives us the opportunity to make a move of significance, whether that be to go get Kenny Pickett, whether that be to go get Kayvon Thibodeau, whether that be to go get Kyle Hamilton, or whether that be to go get Russell Wilson, or to go get Aaron Rodgers, which seems insane to me, or go get a Derek Carr. Who knows? I don't know who the quarterback is next year. That's really what it comes back to. And I think we have a conversation coming up about, you know, quarterbacking in general at this point in the NFL. But it all kind of falls back on that, obviously. That's kind of the most important factor when it comes down to, all right, what do they do with quarterback? What do we do with the picks? And are those things connected?
So let's go right into that. So what do you think you have to be in terms of like top quarterback, like top 15, top 20, top 25 to win a Super Bowl? Because I posed this question to you before this show, like Nick Foles kind of broke my brain. Like Nick Foles being able to win a Super Bowl, like should have broken a lot of like, I think teams and GMs and coaches' brains. That's like, hey, this backup quarterback won a Super Bowl. Now he hit lightning in a bottle, had the number one overall pick. So they were home every game. But then you look at like your Jared Goffs. You look at your like Brad Johnsons, your Trent Dilfers from back in the day. You look at your Peyton Mannings with four neck surgeries on Denver and them winning titles and stuff. And Eli Manning even winning two Super Bowls and whatnot. Like, how much do you think, like, does a quarterback have to be top 20, top 25, as long as they have a really good defense they build around, maybe some weapons too, to win a Super Bowl? So that's what I'm looking at right now with like Jalen Hurts. And I know there's a lot of criticism with Jalen Hurts. It didn't help that Gardner Minshew played really well. But the thing with Jalen is like, I believe in the guy a lot. I believe in his personality. I believe in his leadership. I believe in his ability to one day get there and not be, you know, your top 10, top five quarterback, but a guy who can definitely lead a team and a guy that I want leading a 2-minute drill when the game is on the line in the NFC Championship game. What do you think about that? What is it? What does a quarterback like have to be in Mark Henry's rankings of quarterback to win a Super Bowl, in your opinion?
Well, before I give the answer, let me just apologize to Kyle and to WIP for, you know, I'm not going to give a sexy answer here. This is going to be a very unsexy answer. It's such a case by case basis. Okay. I think that it's a case by case basis, because if you would have asked me in a vacuum, can Jared Goff take a team to the Super Bowl and, you know, be within a touchdown of winning it, I'd say no. But when you have Aaron Donald, who's the best player in the world defensively, and when you have Jalen Ramsey, who is probably a top five player in the world defensively, and you have all that talent on offense, and when you have the boy wonder in Sean McVay calling plays and scheming it up and remembering every play from forever, apparently. So you have so many advantages and so many things that are going your way that you can hide the quarterback. But even they showed that you couldn't hide him in the Super Bowl, and even they showed that we saw many times that it was hard for San Fran to hide Jimmy G even on the way there. But those teams were able to do it, and those teams were really close to winning a Super Bowl with those guys. And imagine how different either of those guys' careers are right now if Jared Goff wins a Super Bowl, if Jimmy G wins a Super Bowl. So it's kind of funny. You say, do you have to be a top 15 quarterback? And you use those guys as an example. But at the time, people would have told you that those guys were top 15 quarterbacks. And yeah. Also at the time, if they would have won that, I think they'd still probably be considered top 15 quarterbacks just because they have a Super Bowl. So mm-hmm. Results dictate most of this conversation, which is kind of the shitty thing about sports in general, the great thing. It depends how you want to look at it. But the days of Brad Johnson, the days of Trent Dilfer, I think it'd be really tough to get there with someone like that. Is Jalen Hurts someone like that? No. Jalen Hurts is his own type of player. And I think that we're seeing it's hard to compare that era with this era with the boom in running quarterbacks, the boom in throwing the ball in general, taking away the rules for the defense. You can look at those early 2000s Super Bowls. You can look at the 90s Super Bowls, the 80s Super Bowls, and you can pretty much draw a straight line from the best defenses in the league to who made the Super Bowl and to who won the Super Bowl. I just don't think you can do that anymore. You need to have a defense that can stop people, but you do have to be built a little bit more offensively nowadays to win a Super Bowl. Now, the San Francisco 49ers and the LA Rams were built offensively. They were built offensively just with not maybe the best quarterback. Those teams had great offenses. Those teams had great pieces around those quarterbacks. I mean, San Fran had a million running backs that all rushed for 6 yards per carry that year. They had George Kittle. They had, they had a ton.
Debo.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if Debo was on that team yet. He was, yeah. Debo was on that team. The Rams had Woods, Cup. They had someone else that is slipping my brain. Did they have Cooks for that year?
I think they did.
Cooks? Yeah, I think they did too. Both those teams had so many weapons that both had fantastic O-lines. You look at that San Fran O-line, still mostly intact today, and you look at that LA O-line, the reason they're having some of the trouble is because they've lost pieces from that Super Bowl O-line from a couple years ago. So it's hard to just say you have to be this good and your team has to be this good because so many things can happen. And honestly, going back to the Jared Goff thing, maybe Jared Goff shouldn't even have been there. Maybe the Saints should have been there and a pass interference changes this whole conversation. But, you know, what I will say is it makes it a lot easier to hide, let's say, 3 or 4 positions throughout the rest of your team. And when you have a quarterback, I think that you can be, you know, maybe a little weak at receiver, and then you can be maybe a little weak at safety, and then you can be maybe a little weak at linebacker. And the fact that you have that quarterback and you have other pieces around those guys, it kind of lets you play average guys out there, play below average guys out there, and still maybe be a Super Bowl team. But when you have a Jimmy G or a Jared Goff or someone that's not a top 10 to 15 quarterback, I don't think you can have a vulnerability anywhere else on your roster. I think the rest of your roster pretty much has to be an A+.
So you think Jalen Hurts, he would have to have an A+ roster to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So you're out on Jalen Hurts.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
That's a spicy take I needed right there.
That's not what I said. But it's also it's hard right now to say, okay, let's go get Kenny Pickett. and Kenny Pickett is that guy. Because I don't know if Kenny Pickett is that guy. Do I feel better about his chances of being that guy than I do about Jalen Hurts? Probably. Probably, yeah. But that's just draft evaluation. I mean, it's always going to be – it's people – and this is a gambling thing too. Someone asked me, you know, what are some trends you look for last night? Why do you make the picks you pick? Again, it's a case-by-case basis. It's such a – you know, trends matter until they don't. And it's the same thing with drafting quarterbacks. Now – and I've heard this brought up with Heinicke. Sorry, I'm all over the place. But Taylor Heinicke –
No, this is good. Keep going.
Taylor Heinicke is being evaluated as a – undrafted guy, as a seventh round pick or whatever he was, he's being evaluated, and it's hard. You have to so far and above over exceed expectations and so far and above prove yourself to cement yourself when you're coming from a spot like that. Jalen Hurts was not undrafted. He was not a seventh round pick, but pretty much if you're a quarterback who doesn't go in the first round, you have to prove yourself almost beyond the shadow of a doubt that you're better than whoever the next first-round quarterback is, or that you're better than the other options out there, because the whole NFL community, the whole scouting community, the whole draft community all evaluated you, and they said you're a day-two pick. No one thought Jalen Hurts was a first-round pick besides me, maybe. I think I had him 32nd. I had him as the last player ranked in my first round. And there's a reason for that. And we see some of those reasons in those games like we did against the Giants. But then you also see some of the – I mean, there's also people that were saying maybe Jalen Hurts isn't a quarterback, or maybe Jalen Hurts is a fifth-round pick. And then you see the reasons that that is so incorrect and that that is so wrong when he does the things he can do and when he does the things that he does do well and has propelled us to whatever our record is now. So I think that Jalen Hurts is an incredibly tricky and difficult conversation to have on almost every level.
That doesn't go well for us Philly sports brains.
No.
We need clear-cut answers. We need, is this guy good? We need a flow chart. Is this guy good? Yes, go this way. Is this guy good? No, go this way. Like, we can't be like, yes, but, no, but. Like, our brains in Philadelphia just do not work like that. We just have swamp for brains.
Yeah, and this is always kind of my issue with Philly, and specifically with this situation. You'll have people freak out after Jalen Hurts has a good game and say, oh my God, Jalen Hurts is his franchise quarterback. How could you not think that? We made the right move trading Wentz. You didn't. I don't think you did that, though.
I'm a big hyperbole guy.
No, but you weren't. I don't think that you were ever like, oh, he's definitely the guy. You never said that. So
I might have made one of the titles of the podcast or the video, Jalen, imagine not having Jalen Hurts as your franchise quarterback.
Well, yeah, but I think that that's all in jest. I think that those people who immediately want to start comparing him to Lamar Jackson and stuff like that, that kind of gets on my nerves, because, you know, it's pretty plain to see that he's not that and that he's a ways away from that. But then the people, I got a bunch of DMs about it this week during the game. The people who freak out about, it's like, oh, can you finally admit Hurts is bad to me? It's like, can you finally admit Minshew's better than Hurts? And it's like, no, I think Hurts is probably like the 20th best quarterback in football, maybe 18th or so. But I think Hurts is, you know, very much in that middle range. And there's a lot of teams that he would make a lot better, and there's a lot of teams that he would make a lot worse. But I'm not going to sit here and say he's not a starting quarterback, because I think that he's a top 30 quarterback no matter how you slice it. So it's a tough conversation. And like you said, we don't do well with ambiguity. We don't do well with
middle. You've always been the one where you're like, I wish Hurts was better, or I wish Hurts was worse, so I could give him a proper evaluation. And sometimes he just falls right in the middle. And that's why I think, you know, with kicking this can down the road, you look at the 2023 draft, you're going to have Bryce Young, you're going to have CJ Stroud, you're going to have Grayson McCall, like, or you have Hurts, and Hurts works out, and you have more capital to shore up the team around him. And if you're not set on any of the QBs in this draft, why not stack capital for next year's? You know, you can also be like, hey, why not draft Kyle Hamilton, or why not go after a defensive lineman, or shore up that O-line or whatnot? I understand. But then you have also, so I went back and looked, I saw this on Reddit. The teams who have had three first rounders in one draft recently, I'm going to name you a couple of them. All right.
Minnesota was one, right?
Minnesota in 13, the Vikings, Sharif Floyd, Xavier Rhodes, that hit, and then Cordarrelle Patterson, who has finally just had a breakout season in 8 years.
Let me tell you, I thought that was the best draft of all time.
You thought the Vikings crushed it?
Those three picks all in one, I was like, yeah, are you kidding me? You thought
the Vikings? Yeah, we're going to be like
Sharif, Sharif Floyd seemed like a beast out of Florida, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, yeah. He was a Philly guy too.
Yeah. Sharif seemed like a beast. Xavier Rhodes, obviously, a really good player. Cordero, and you can see now that Cordero obviously is a pretty good player. And it was so maddening for years that he wasn't used like how he should have been. But yeah, I thought those three guys were going to change the Vikings roster.
Then the 17 Browns, you had Myles Garrett obviously hit. Jabril Peppers, which is like, I guess he was used for OBJ, and he's not going to get another contract from New York. OBJ's now obviously on LA. And then you have David Njoku, who kind of was a miss too. So they hit one third on that. The 19 Raiders, Cleveland Farrell.
What a joke.
Yeah, right. Josh Jacobs, they hit on that. But Jonathan Abrams not is their really. Safety. You don't think Josh Jacobs?
Nah, he's average is best.
All right, well then, I think he's a top running back that people would take. But and then again, it's a running back, so it's kind of like shit. Like, you know, you're going to get hopefully 6 years out of this guy. And then you have Jonathan Abrams, who just gets picked on all the time.
He gets hurt. They both get hurt. Abrams and Jacobs, all they do is get hurt.
And then you have your 19 Giants, and you have your boy Danny Jones.
Dexter's in there next, right?
Dexter Lawrence, who's kind of like, is he good? Is he not good? Is he a middle of the ground player? It's like, yeah, he's a pretty good player.
And then DeAndre the Baker, Georgia. Yeah,
and he's not even on the team anymore.
Yeah.
So you're looking at that, and you're saying like teams have mostly hit on one third of their draft picks when they have three first rounders in a recent study by me, Kyle. How's that make you feel?
It doesn't. I think it's an interesting conversation for a podcast like this. I don't think we should evaluate the 2022 draft in our three picks based on how idiotic the Browns and the Raiders were. And
you don't think we should evaluate on Dave Gettleman's picks?
Yeah.
On Mike Mayock's picks?
Oh my! What was that middle Cleveland Browns pick? What was the middle one?
It was Jabril Peppers and Njoku. Yeah.
Jabril Peppers was like the most like our scouting department doesn't pay attention to football, but we've heard this name in big games before. And when we downloaded the draft class in Madden, this guy was pretty good. So we're going to
like almost won the Heisman. He had Heisman hype. Everyone was like the next Desmond Howard, blah, blah, blah.
He was the most overrated college football player of my lifetime. Jabril Peppers.
Really? I loved Jabril Peppers.
He wasn't that good at either of the positions he played, but he played both of them. So people were like, oh my God, Jabril Peppers. He's a superstar. He was at Michigan. He was such a fraud.
You don't want to evaluate on Sashi Brown's draft class that then became John Dorsey's draft class?
How many? Yeah. The amount of decision makers they've had in Cleveland over the last however many years is absurd.
And then I'm trying to see who the – oh, my God. Leslie Frazier coached that 2013 Vikings team. They went 5-10-1.
He's the Bills DC right now, right?
Is he? Wow. I can't even find who their GM was.
Spielman would have been. I think.
Oh, it was Spielman? Spielman. Okay. Yeah. So not really the greatest grocery list of prominent GMs in NFL history. So,
hey, I'm never gonna come at Rick Spielman. He loves drafting Notre Dame guys. I'm never gonna shit on him.
So
it's went pretty well for him too. Also, by the way, Harrison Smith and Kyle Rudolph were both pretty good players a while for them.
Other than Tom Zibikowski, you draft safeties and you draft O-linemen from Notre Dame.
Tight ends, yeah.
Tight ends. You're sitting pretty, all right? You might not win any titles. You might get blown out by SEC guys, teams that stack SEC guys. But, hey, you're going to be in the run. You're going to be in the running.
Receiver's been pretty good, too. No, like, superstars, but they've, like, consistently put out NFL receivers. Although, Chase Claypool is a fucking idiot. Yeah.
Did you see that last night?
It's so funny because he, like, when he was at Notre Dame, he was such a quiet guy. Like, he was so, like, didn't make any noise, didn't cause any buzz, like, didn't give any interviews. And he was a good player. Like, he was a good enough player that he could have done that at Notre Dame. And he just, like, didn't. So when he first started last year, really being, like, kind of a diva and he
Juju.
Did the whole –
it's got to be Juju.
You think it's Juju? Yeah.
I think it's got to be Juju. I think Juju, like, I know people want to shit on the TikToks. Juju was making a lot of money in endorsements. Like when the Juju on that beat song came out in his senior year, he went viral for like dancing to that. And he's like making a bunch of endorsement money. Like, why not? Chase Claypool will be like, yo, I want to make a lot of endorsement money. Maybe Brian Kelly's really good at just like crushing that too. Like just crushing that diva persona.
Maybe. It's just like the funny thing is everyone's just going to talk about this guy as a diva now because of that play on primetime and because of plays like that. He's a really good player. Like, he is a really good receiver. When they get a quarterback in Pittsburgh, With Claypool, and if Deontay Johnson can catch, Deontay Johnson's always open. With those two guys, I think the Steelers, if they get a quarterback for next year, are going to be my Super Bowl pick.
All right, let's talk about Nick Sirianni's offense, because I feel like that's getting just brushed under the rug a lot now that a month ago people were throwing flowers at him, and now we're like, oh, we might have our coach of the future. This came from Mike Kay. Sirianni's offense, it scored 36 times this season, 5 more times than the Giants have scored 30 in the last 2 years.
Wow.
Which is, I guess, not surprising when you look at Joe Judge and Daniel Jones and Saquon can't stay healthy and none of their wide receivers can stay healthy. But this is where Sirianni's offense ranks in the league right now. It's top 10 in points scored. They're 24th in average field position, but 6th in average plays per drive, which is pretty impressive. First in rushing, obviously. 4th in third down conversions. 9th in percentage of offensive drives ending in a score. And they're scoring a touchdown 64% of the time they reach the red zone, which is top 10 in the league. I think penalties are cleaned up. In-game management has improved. I can't remember the last challenge that I wanted to pull my hair out. Maybe I'm just like thinking of Doc Rivers, and every time, you know, Nick Sirianni challenges, I'm just like, it's actually a good challenge. But he's figured out the strength of this team, and it's to run the ball. And this team seems to like him, and he seems to have him prepared. They're rarely unprepared, at least on the offensive side of the ball. And what do you glean from those stats?
Yeah, I mean, I said it on our, I was going to say our Monday show. I think it was a Wednesday show.
We did Wednesday show. We missed Monday.
But I said it on our Wednesday show. I could not be happier with Nick Sirianni right now over these last 4 games. I think the play calling's been fantastic. I think the game management's been incredible. There's like not, you know, there's not as many penalties at all that you're like, what's going on? This team has no discipline or whatever.
Dirk Barnett like hasn't done anything stupid.
It's always him. There's no, it's always him on.
It should be, that should be Rager, by the way. Like every, like we should get him on the sideline and be like, it's always him. It should be like, that should be now directed at Jalen Rager.
I will say the fact that he played Rager more snaps than Devonta Smith last week is like so dumbfounding.
I think that was situational though. He said,
I don't know what the fuck the situation could be. Like that's where I'm at with that. I get that he said it's situational and I'm not a football guy like Sirianni is clearly, but
I think it was the personnel. If they're in 13, I think Rager plays more than, I think they're just in 13 personnel or 12. It was one of the personnels that they were in that like Rager typically plays more.
Yeah. My take is I don't care what the personnel is. I just don't want him in.
Find a way to get your Heisman receiver out on the field. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. I think that's a little crazy, but like you said, every time he challenges it, I'm always yelling at him to challenge it. And every time he doesn't challenge it, either I'm yelling at him to challenge it and then I see a replay and I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. Maybe not. Or like, I'm like, don't challenge it. It's not going to get overturned. And then he doesn't. It just feels like he's also going for it on fourth down at the right times, I think, and going for 2 points on 2-point conversions at the right time. And that's, I mean, there is a lot of analytics to that. And I'm a big believer pretty much if you ever ask me in like a this or that situation, I'm almost always going to say go for it. But there are times where I'm like, you know what, let's dial back the aggression. And it seems like he understands that. It seems like he understands when to be aggressive and when to not. And I'm going to take a shot at someone who I absolutely love in Doug Peterson. But sometimes it felt like Doug was either being aggressive for the sake of being aggressive, or it felt like he was like, you know what, I'm not going to be aggressive today. Like, I'm not going to do that stuff today. It felt like he went into a game thinking how he was going to manage it. Yeah. I think Sirianni kind of just like goes by the seat of his pants and kind of plays it situation by situation.
I could see Doug being a big rival guy, like guys that have spurned him on his way up through the ranks, or like maybe some clips or some newspaper clippings in the back of his head. Like I can't point to one. Joe Judge would be the only one that I could see like that. Anyone that's ever like called out Doug Peterson, Mike Lombardi, one of them too, but obviously he's not a coach, but I could see Doug being a real spiteful guy. Being a real, like, I'm going to step on this motherfucker's throat. But I, you know what, to be personally, I loved the aggression. If you went for it on fourth down on your own 20, on your own goal line, like you can buy in. I will buy in. I'd play Madden ball. I didn't love the Patriots Bills game. Cause I thought it was going to be an all Madden game. I thought there was going to be no punts, no field goals. Everyone was going for it on fourth down. They should have after that 15 yard punt by that one player. Go ahead.
You caught me off guard.
I interrupted you and you had more to talk about.
No, I was letting you cook there like Russell Wilson, but But yeah, Doug, I never had a problem with Doug's aggression. I'm just saying that it seems like Sirianni's is much more calculated. It seems like Sirianni's is much more based in numbers and based in feel of the mm-hmm. current game, instead of coming into the game being like, I'm going to be aggressive. Fuck it. Like, I think that that's a little bit different. And yeah, I have no complaints about Sirianni as of late. And I will just say, I couldn't find this fucking tweet. I was talking about this tweet to someone because I loved it. Because I was talking about, we were talking about head coaching candidates for next year, mm-hmm. Like across the league, not the Eagles, obviously. And I was like, well, you know, Doug is getting a job. Like, I don't know where, I heard Jacksonville. I heard Jacksonville has interest.
Well, that's what we said. And he lives down in, I think he's in Key West right now. I think me and you talked about Jacksonville with somebody, or I talked about Jacksonville with somebody. Doug also just feels like a big Florida guy. Like he should just retire down to Florida. Nice visor. Very nice gray hair that will turn into a jet white that'll look beautiful. Dick Vermeil, yeah. Jimmy Johnson style.
Can you imagine how happy he'd be being the Jaguars coach and like not having to, and having known what the Philly media is like and having like to deal with that, and then going to Jacksonville following Urban Meyer, who is like a complete media nightmare? Like, you would be the darling of all darlings.
Yeah, it would be the perfect job for him. Knows how to handle like a quarterback who was picked in the top five too. He'd probably do things differently. And Mike Rowe would probably be on the staff.
It's funny. I have a friend named Mike Rowe. So there's so many people named Mike Rowe.
Dirty jobs, Mike Rowe.
Exactly. There's so many people named Mike Rowe, and I have a friend. Shout out Mike Rowe. But it's pretty funny. Like, Doug Peterson is our ex that, you know, we had amazing times with, like the best times of our life with. And it ended weird. It ended messy. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't really even remember why it ended. It's kind of like, oh, like, why? You know, whatever. But
the job got away from you. Like, yeah. You're really focused on your career. Maybe not enough time for the ex. Like, like the first 5 years were great. The sixth year just wasn't what you wanted, and everything just kind of snowballed.
And it's like, you know, should a bad couple months with someone really, really ruin 5-6 years? Probably not, but it did. And that's what happened. So we broke up. It was sad. But you know, we found a young, hot new girl who, you know, maybe she's not perfect. She's
a little
not
crazy.
Look, yeah, maybe a little crazy. Maybe she's saying dumb quotes sometimes, talking about flowers.
Her Instagram is unbearable.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, the sex is fun. But
no doubt.
But and you know, the games are fun. The games are the sexier. The wins are fun.
But you check the ex's Instagram from time to time. You see how they're doing. Make sure they're not with, like, anyone. You're kind of happy when they're not with anyone. And then probably the next 6 months, they're going to be with someone. It's going to hurt a little bit.
And in the back of your head, you're like, you know what? I'm happy. I hope that she's happy. Yeah. But, you know, could it have worked out?
Yeah. And then in the back of your mind, you also hope the relationship burns to the ground. And then maybe one day you guys will meet up 15 years from now. And you always think about that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, for sure.
And when Doug comes back to be in the Ring of Honor.
By the way, I just want my girlfriend that listens to these podcasts to know that I am not talking about myself. I am talking about the Eagles and Doug Peterson.
Mm-hmm. I just want to let Mark's girlfriend who listens to this podcast that he's definitely talking about Doug Peterson and the Eagles, and he loves you very much.
Absolutely.
I got nothing else on. Oh, what would make you like buy in to Nick Sirianni? Like, is there anything like you want to change about him?
No, not right now. Just the Rager shit. I wish he would have the gumption to say fuck you to Jalen Rager and get out of here. Besides that, nothing really.
That's got
to
be a Howie. That's got to be coming from the top down, because Mike Clay, the special teams guy, came out and said Rager's going to go back to returning kicks. And it's just like, how can you just, like, teams want that? Like, teams kick it short on purpose.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So that he can return. It's like, I don't know. I don't know what's going to do. I mean, I guess you can't really give up on a first round pick. Maybe they're trying to get trade value. I don't know what kind of trade value it has. But before we get into gambling picks, I have this one gripe. We're on different ends of the spectrum here. Announcers in football, especially the NFL right now in your big networks, like Chris Collinsworth just signed a deal for $12.5 million to stay on Sunday Night Football. Romo's obviously making $18 million a year.
Earns every penny.
I don't understand announcers making so much money. I don't think I've ever watched a game because of the announcer. Maybe they enhance the broadcast, but yeah. I think of it like a Manning cast kind of thing where it's like I get value from listening to Peyton and Eli. I like the guests. I know you don't like the guests. I like when they break down football and stuff, but I've never really been like, oh, man, we got Texans, Detroit. I'm going to tune in for Al Michaels or I'm going to tune in for Collinsworth or Romo. But you seem to be on the other end of the spectrum where like you like the announcers.
Yeah, I definitely don't tune in and out of games due to announcers. But if I'm going to be making a commitment to watching every football game pretty much, then I would like the announcers to be good is kind of where I'm coming from. And I think it's really noticeable when there's good ones and when there's bad ones. And then Vilma. There's people. Yeah, Vilma's terrible. And then I think that there's people in the middle.
Mark Schlereth.
Yeah, Schlereth is fine. He does not offensive.
I think they're a middle one. Yeah, they're middle ground.
Yeah. They're fine. I actually think announcing is a much bigger deal in the other sports, which is funny because the football ones are the ones that are paid higher. I think there are so many bad basketball announcers. It's actually unbelievable. I think one of the biggest problems that the NBA has is the fact that all of its announcers hate basketball. I've talked about that before, but Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson just sit around and bitch about the fact that things aren't the way they were 15 years ago and bitch about the fact that coaches get fired and complain about the refs. That's all they do. Reggie Miller just gets out there and yells and screams about whatever narrative is going on.
The basketball ones are very bad. The former player, for as good as the former players are in the NFL, Chris Webber, Reggie, they're bad. Like they are so bad. Like almost unlistenable bad.
But then you watch a college basketball game with, you know, the main crew on it, and you're like, oh, this is great, Raftery or whoever you want to say. Then you watch Jim Nance and Romo, and you're like, this is just fantastic. And then you watch, I think the best broadcasting team in any sport in the game is Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler. I think that they're incredible. I think that when a game is bad, they're able to talk about the rest of college football in a way that's interesting and keeps you watching, even if a game is bad and keeps the sound on that TV. And when a game is good, I think that a big part of this is big game feel.
Are you a Gus guy?
Yeah. Unless I'm losing money against him. And then he's like, the problem.
And
yeah.
There goes Blake Corum for a 75 yard touchdown.
Fucking shut the fuck up, Gus Johnson. Like there's times where it's like, oh my God, that was such an amazing moment.
You just take it out on Gus Johnson. Like, shut the fuck up, Gus Johnson.
Like, I know you got Wisconsin plus 3.5, but fuck you. Like,
I've got a mortgage to pay for, Gus Johnson.
Yeah. So Gus is great when you're winning. When you're winning a bet, Gus is great.
I never thought about that.
When you're losing a bet, Gus is the worst. I'm stealing that a little bit from Big Cat. Big Cat just hates him because of the fact, like, he can't even get happy when Gus freaks out for his sake because he knows how upsetting it is when he's just, oh my God, can you believe it? I can't. And it's like, okay, Gus, dude.
Because I love it because he brings the same juice to the Big Ten championship that he brings to like Nebraska, Iowa on like.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate it. He's great for basketball too. I love Gus Johnson. I do.
Like the fact that he's not, and now I'm like, you do this a lot where you just convince me that I'm wrong on some of my points. The fact that he's not on the NCAA tournament anymore is ridiculous. It is. He took over the NCAA tournament that one year. Like took it over. Like no, everybody was like, "Who the hell is this guy?" And he became like from the parking lot, bang! Like that's an all-time call, wasn't it? It was Ali Farouk Manesh from the parking lot.
Yeah.
Oh, the God, funny Northern Iowa.
The funny thing is with the guy who you brought up to bring to start the conversation is Collinsworth. Collinsworth's bad at his job.
He's a mean.
I can't stand Collinsworth. I think he's terrible. I think his Super Bowl performance was unbelievable. I think he should have been fired on the spot for how he called that game and the money that he had on New England. Yeah. The entire game. The Alshon touchdown, the Zach Ertz touchdown, the Corey Clement touchdown. Every game, every moment, he had something to say. So I thought he did a terrible job. He's Ala Abdelnaby. He's basically Ala Abdelnaby. Mark Zumoff was the best play-by-play basketball guy in the business. Al Michaels is the best play-by-play period in the business. Al Michaels, I said that big game feel. You hear Al Michaels calling a Sunday night football game, it's like, yeah, this is a big deal. Like, I know that I'm watching a primetime game here with Al on the call. And, you know, anytime Al references gambling, I think that I, like, literally have, like, a full-on pop for it. It's like, yeah, Al, we exist. There are dozens of us.
Al's got the under today?
Yeah, yeah. I love Al. I think he's so good. And I think that he is saving Collinsworth from looking really bad. And we're starting to see that with Ala this year. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of tweets about it last night, actually, that people were saying.
Sorry, go ahead.
He's really homerish. He's so bad. It's bad.
The Giddy stuff was funny. I laughed my ass off at that. But there was it was Richards, Nicholas Richards from Charlotte. He should have got an M1 call on Joel Embiid. And he's like, hey, big fella, got to put more time in the league to get that kind of call against the superstar. And it was just like, shut up. Like, it was just cringy. I was cringing. And you can see that Zumoff definitely hid a lot of his deficiencies. Because they legitimately like were best friends. It was like two best friends just hanging out at the bar, talking sports. One guy going nuts on the broadcast. I told you this before. Kate and Ala just feel like the crew from you've never seen this movie from Pitch Perfect. They just feel like the announcing crew from Pitch Perfect.
Big Pitch Perfect guy. Huge Pitch Perfect guy.
Are you the Pitch Perfect guy? Maybe you might have told that. Maybe I said it to my roommate then. Yeah, I was. Huge. I was like. They strike me as the group from the Pitch Perfect. Those announcers.
Those are fantastic movies. The second one's good as well, I think.
It is
Pitch Perfect. Very funny. Very good movie.
Didn't see the third.
Didn't see the third either. I don't think. But a la even last night, Joel poked the ball out from someone on the Jazz, and it like landed in Danny Green's hands. But Joel kind of like put his hands up to make it seem like, oh, maybe they called a foul on me, and Danny kind of like stopped too and like looked over. And like the Jazz player was like complaining, and like as I like Kate Scott announces, like Joel pokes the ball away, and like as she's like saying it, I was like, no whistle, no whistle, no whistle. And I was like, it's the first quarter. We're 5 minutes into the first here. It's 13-12. Like we're saying no whistle, no whistle, no whistle. Like I
shot his wad real early.
I was like, oh my God, Ala. But I love him. I think he seems like the best guy ever. I think he seems like such a nice dude. So I would never criticize him too much. And I think he was so good with Zomo. I would be really curious to see how bad Collinsworth would be without Al Michaels.
They're talking about Aikman and Collinsworth. That would never work. Yeah.
They'd have to be a three-person booth.
So Aikman wants Romo money. But he would have to do 35 to 40 games. He does about 25 now, and nobody thinks that a broadcaster can do 35 to 40 games, a lot of games. He would split it between Fox and Amazon because Amazon's getting a lot of the rights for next year, but they're Aikman using sucks. The NBC broadcast.
Aikman sucks. Really? I don't think Aikman's good at all. I like Buck.
I like Aikman. I like Buck, too.
I didn't like Buck 10 years ago or 5 years ago, probably.
He's become more of a personality. He's actually funny. He's an asshole, which is actually hilarious.
The shot he took at Peyton was incredible. It was great,
but he's an asshole. Like if you told me Joe Buck like grew up in like Philly or grew up in like the outside suburbs of Philly, I'd be like yeah, he definitely did. He just like doesn't kind of care. He's an asshole. He'll come for your neck if he wants to. Here's a little conspiracy theory. You think that $12.5 million is because NBC wants to keep the PFF stuff? Maybe they have a little investment in there.
It's interesting. I don't know. I know Colin. How involved is he with that?
I thought he created it.
I don't think he created it. That's what
but
I'm
he confused. Has a large investment in it.
I know he like owns it in some capacity. I don't think he created it though. It's also so funny when you see it get tweeted out, like his podcast, and it's so funny to see him Chris there, like, yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm talking to Richard Sherman, you know, it's just like a weird, I would never be like, oh, I need to listen to Chris Collinsworth's podcast. Like, that's something I need to check out.
Yeah, like he's never going to drive me to somewhere where it's like Tony and Nance, I would. And Gus Johnson, I'd be like, all right, this, you know, big game. Let's throw up a little bit on Gus Johnson. Like NBC Sundays, you know, I'm watching Succession.
You're NBC. In on Succession?
Oh, I've been a Succession guy since the jump.
My Pat Moran just bullies me every single week that I don't watch it.
You're strike me as a TV guy.
No, I am, though. That's the thing. Like, I'm a huge TV guy outside of football season, generally. But my problem is when there's shows that everyone is telling me are so good. I don't know what it is about me, but I always want to push back against it and be like, ah, shut the fuck up. It's not that good. But I'm interested in Succession. Succession's one I'm interested in. But if you tell me about Yellowstone and I see another commercial for Yellowstone, or I hear about Ted Lasso, I'm going to be like, all right, yeah, show it up your ass.
Yeah, I worked in like a corporate-y setting that was like a TV magnet in Comcast. So like I actually like see some of like what they do there in my old job. So that's why I originally got into it. But it's good. It's also like, I don't know, season three, I feel like by season three, a lot of the shows kind of like die out. I stopped watching Walking Dead after season three. I stopped watching, I think, How I Met Your Mother after season three. Just like season three, like I don't have the attention span already. And now it's like the character arcs and the storylines kind of just like go in and out everywhere. It's ridiculous. You ever seen this Collinsworth video? Creepy Collinsworth video?
No, I don't know.
Let me put it up. This is from Black Adam Schefter, confused with the White Adam Schefter.
Being a bachelor and playing football, I have a lot of similarities between them. You go out, and there's not anything in the world any more competitive than going out and trying to find the girl. I like girls that aren't too bright because you can trick them a little bit. The punk rockers all up. Those are my big girls. High school girls love me. 14, 18, I'm a big star with them. As soon as they mature, after about 18 years old, they start figuring out that, wait a minute, I know there's better than that out there, you know? I think.
Yeah.
That's Chris the Groomer Collinsworth.
Yeah. Yeah, the Groomer. What's the PFF grades used to have on those 14 to 18 year olds back in the day?
Jesus Christ.
Finder full of women out there in Cincinnati.
He could have just left it at high school girls that turn, you know, there's at least some ambiguity. They could be 18 or like, you know, but when you go, no, 14 to 18 year olds.
Yeah, he's like, we're really looking at this 14 year old in the 1986 Chris Collinsworth draft.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Oh
my God. She's high upside.
Really like dumb girls so I can trick them.
Yeah, I like dumb girls so I can trick them. It's like, oh, okay, all right, well, funny how that one hasn't gotten brought up on the NBC broadcast. Why is Al Michaels not on all the time? Why is Mike Tirico on a lot?
I don't know. I don't know what that is. Tirico's good, by the way, but he's not Al Michaels.
Spumoni? Homie Spumoni?
Don't get me. Yeah, Tirico's good, but he thinks he's an Italian white man. It's insane.
You want to get into picks before you get out of here?
Yeah, I hate my picks, but we'll
do it. I hate this fucking slate. I hate this slate. I'm going to let you go first, please.
I don't have much to say, but I'll go Falcons +3 at the Panthers.
I feel like we're just going to roll through this, which is perfectly fine.
I think the Panthers are dead. Matt Rule fired Joe Brady. Joe Brady was probably saving that offense to even look as bad as it did. I think the offense looks even worse without Joe Brady. They're going to run the ball like 50 times.
I hate this. Cowboys -4.5. Ugh, that's so gross. Montez Sweat is out. I don't think they're going to get a lot of pressure on Dak and whatnot. Let's just go Cowboys -4.5 because we're rooting for him anyway.
I think I'd rather bet any other game on the board than that one. That one is like, I look at that and I'm like, I have no fucking idea.
Do you want to shit down my throat anymore?
I hate that. But I don't even hate that pick because I don't like it. But I don't like why. I would hate the pick if you said Washington too. Like, no matter what pick you gave in that game, I'm like, yeah, I kind of hate it. Like, I don't know. I'll leave my best one for last. So I'll go Texans team total under 16.5. Initially, I liked the straight up over under in this game. It just keeps dropping. Like every time I check, this total is lower. It's at 40 now. I think it was. It started at like 44. And I think the Seahawks are like 2-9-1 on the over this year. Yeah, 2-9-1. And they just hit their first over since week 2 last week. So Seahawks have been really good for the under. Texans don't really score a lot of points at all. They scored 0 last week, 14 the week before, 9 3 weeks ago. So this number would have hit in 3 of the last 4 weeks. So I'll go to Texans team total under 16.5. I wish that number was 17.5, but I'll take it.
I like Baltimore Ravens +3.
You took my best bet.
Don't DM me your best bets then.
That's true. I forgot that I was talking about the Ravens.
I like Ravens +3. I think you should hammer that. Mark, do you want to go into it more? Why you should hammer Baltimore +3?
Lamar Jackson's 37-11 in the regular season. 37-11. That is just an insane number. Anytime you give me Lamar Jackson in the regular season as anywhere close to like in that -1 to +7 range, I'm going to take it. That's what he does. He wins football games in the regular season. And also what he does is he owns the Cleveland Browns. Even if he has diarrhea, even if he has coming off of COVID, he owns the Cleveland Browns. Lamar Jackson, he struggles against the Steelers. He showed that last week. And they still would have won the game had Lamar Jackson thrown the ball an inch to the left, or Mark Andrews puts his arm out a little farther and is able to tip it to himself. So that number that's 37-11 would actually be 38-10. If that happens last week, I think they come out fired up and mad as hell about that loss to the Steelers. And I think they win this game against Cleveland, kind of end Cleveland's year a little bit.
Yeah. You're not worried that they don't have any, I'm not worried that they don't have any cornerbacks.
Who, the Ravens?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Screw it. It's an offensive league anyway.
They don't have any receivers in Cleveland anyway. What, Donovan Peoples-Jones is going to have 200 yards? Baker Mayfield's going to make me regret this?
Baker Mayfield's going to walk around like Big Ben after this.
Jesus,
with the ice packs, man.
You're defending Baker, though. You're kind of on Team Baker.
I'm on Team Baker because I feel like what we saw last year was good Baker. And I think he's really banged up. And he doesn't do himself any service with like calling out the fans and everything, like the ones that were like cheering while they're on offense. He's like, oh, those are probably the ones that want to see us fail. It's like, all right, dude, put your God complex aside for 1 second and let's just be like real human beings. But I think this Baker Mayfield, I think a lot of people are counting him out. I feel really bad for him that he lost out on $100 million because I do like him. He's cocky as fuck. But yeah, I think he's actually really banged up. Torn labrum and other shoulder issues. I think he's got a knee injury, fake knee injury maybe. But yeah, he's just banged up.
Yeah,
doesn't have any weapons either.
It does seem like he gets more excuses than some other people. I just
feel like he gets a lot more. What's the opposite of excuses? Negative publicity because he's in so many commercials.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. You got your last.
I did my three picks.
What was your third one?
The Ravens.
Are you taking the Ravens?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought we weren't allowed to do the same picks.
We've been doing. We did like one equal pick the last 4 weeks now.
I don't think you're right. I think you're wrong on that.
That's true. We both took the Bengals last week.
We did take the Bengals. Speaking of the Bengals, I'm going 49ers -2 just out of spite. The baby Bengals are in the gambling graveyard forever for not hitting the team total over. I think I got it 27.5. You might have got it 26.5 last week, but it doesn't matter. They went down 24-0 to the Chargers, came back 24-22, didn't score the rest of the game. It was the Jamar Chase interception will always forever be burned into my mind when I think of the baby Bengals. And it might have got me
horrible
to hate the baby Bengals. I might hate Joe Burrow for the rest of my life.
Wow.
He's so likable. Yeah,
it was a tough loss, man. That team total over is a tough loss.
Also, really bad pinky. At one point, he was handing the ball off with the wrong hand. He was like screaming as he was like handing the ball off. It's wild. But all right, that's the podcast. Rate, review, subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, subscribe to us on YouTube. We will talk to you on Monday. Big episode. Got Mike Lieberthal on talking a little lockout.